I'm Jaco Voigt, the CEO of Catalytic, and this is Unbundled. In this series, I help to demystify technology in the world of business. Join me as we explore how technology can make your business better. In this episode, we're chatting about a cybersecurity strategy. We're chatting about what a cybersecurity strategy is, how to go about formulating one, and what to do once you have formulated that strategy. By the end of this episode, you'll have a clearer idea of how to get a cybersecurity strategy in place for your business. I'm joined by Pierre Jacobs, Head of Security Operations and Compliance at CyberAntix. Pierre, welcome.
Thank you, Jaco. Thank you for hosting me.
So Pierre, we always start the show by just telling the listeners a little bit about yourself. as much as you want to say.
That's good. I have about 24 years experience in cybersecurity. I started at the age of 25, and I hold various industry certifications. I hold a master's degree in computer science with specialization in information security, and also a PhD in computer science. My experience range from telco to financial industries, and I've served mostly in a consultative role during my tenure at different service providers.
Okay, well, I think based on what you just told us, I'm sure you must be the most qualified guest that we've ever had on the show. So thank you for giving us your time and your expertise.
I sincerely doubt that, but thank you. That's kind of you. Thanks.
So, and I like the consulting angle that you've come from. So maybe can we start with just a basic question of, How would you term what is a cybersecurity strategy?
Yeah, okay, let's first start with exploring strategy, what a strategy is. So a strategy, in my opinion, is how to get from point A to point B. From a cybersecurity perspective, you would have a mission and a vision statement. In other words, a clear statement of where you want to be in terms of your cybersecurity. And the idea is always to improve your cybersecurity posture and to minimize risk to your organization. In terms of a strategy and the development of a strategy, there are various ways to get there. You could potentially look at performing a gap analysis. So this is where you assess your current state of your cybersecurity efforts against a standard, an industry standard, internationally based practices and so on. So we typically use a standard such as ISO 27001, and we use this then to measure your current state against what the standards prescribe, and we perform a gap analysis. And the strategy then describes how to fill those gaps or how to close those gaps. We're flexible in that we could use different standards, frameworks, and best practices. So there's also NIST ESP 800-53, which is another solid piece of work to use. And that's basically it.
So when before we started the show, I was speaking to you about now. If you look at the Catalytic, typical customer that we talk to on a daily basis, typical small to medium enterprise,
yes,
or SME, if you want to call it that. Would you say that in the different segments of business? So what you're talking about, it almost sounds like it's a big business, big enterprise type scenario. What do you find? What's happening in the small to medium enterprise space? Do we take it as seriously as we should?
In my experience, no, not always. There are some outliers who does, but I would say around about 85% of organizations or smaller, medium-sized companies do not take it as seriously as they should. And it's important that they do, because this could have a huge impact. It could literally stop business and stop your income. It could close your business.
And it's maybe a bit speculative, but why would you say that those SMEs don't take it seriously? Do they not understand it? Do they think it's a big money exercise?
I think, Jaco, their focus is different. I also think it's a people skills issue. Remember, cyber skills are expensive. It costs a lot of money to appoint someone who can do these things for you. Getting experienced people is difficult. It's costly. It costs money. If you if you develop a strategy, a solid strategy, it's pointless if you develop it and you don't implement it. And the implementation thereof is, it costs money. You will identify controls, technical or administrative controls, and these things have to be implemented, and they cost money to implement. So from an experience perspective, I would say definitely skills, people is an issue. And then also cost is a big issue. And remember, these smaller guys, they focus on making money. They're surviving.
Yeah.
I had been with customers where we provided quotations as an example. And they quickly calculated that they could buy 50,000 bricks because they were in the construction business.
Yes.
for the price of protecting the endpoints. So it's difficult. It's challenging.
So it's almost... to me, that's almost the same as an insurance policy. It's expensive until the day when you need it, and then, you know, it's almost like it's too late then.
It's almost always a grudge purchase, okay. Almost always.
So Pierre, how would one go about formulating that business strategy, that cybersecurity strategy?
I alluded to it earlier. So typically what we would do, there would be a mission and a vision statement. And this is...
From a
security perspective, not from a business perspective. Okay. Remember... the cybersecurity effort is there to minimize risk to the organization and to support the business process. Typically, the way that a company should start or would start is by identifying the need for a cybersecurity strategy. They have to understand that they have to improve their cybersecurity posture. So they have to there's some level of risk that they're exposed to if they don't, and that risk needs to be addressed. What we will then do, what an organization typically would do, is then the whole journey starts with an assessment of the current state. And from by this, I mean that they would be identifying a taxonomy, just a fancy word for grouping, their security controls. So they could group it as technical or administrative controls and so on. Look at the current state. What do I currently have in place? Where do I want to be? And how am I going to measure this journey? So KPIs, metrics need to be developed and so on. And a good point to measure yourself against is something like a standard or best practice. There are many different ways of achieving this. You could use enterprise architecture principles or approach to do this. You could perform a SWOT analysis, or you could perform a gap analysis, I've just spoken.
So assuming then, if I can translate what I'm hearing, what you're saying is, if there's executive buy-in, somebody that's an expert in the field like yourself would then come in, and then you almost have to workshop and say, okay, right, what does the current environment look like? And then what are those gaps and risks associated to that?
Yaku, yes, that's key. Okay, I'm glad that you mentioned this. Management buy-in is key. Without that, you're not going to go anywhere. Forget it. But yes, that would typically be the approach. So we would perform an assessment from an administrative control perspective. Administrative controls are things like your policies, process, procedures, and so on, as well as regulatory and legal requirements that you have to adhere to. And we would then secondly perform a technical assessment. So we would have a clear idea of the current state of the organization, where you're at in terms of your technical and administrative controls. And that then provides us with a path when measured against something like ISO 27001 to develop a strategy.
And I assume in those 85 or 90% of those cases, at the end of that process, whoever the management's that's sitting in there, they probably get a big fright of what the actual state of things are.
Most often, yes. If you look at the prevalence of ransomware as an example, and phishing and the lack of a backup strategy that we found in smaller businesses, definitely it is a frightening experience. It's an eye opener.
And I often talk about it, and I think the perception amongst a lot of small business but why will it happen to me? I'm like a mom and pop shop. Why is somebody gonna actually take the time to hack me? I'm not a bank or something like that. But it still happens.
It does happen. It still happens. The reasons for there are plentiful. these guys are ruthless. They unscrupulous. They don't really care who they target. Obviously, your larger organizations or criminal syndicates, cyber criminal syndicates, are aiming for the bigger income companies, but the smaller ones, they don't really care. And as I said, literally, it's something that can stop your business.
And the reason that they're doing it is for money.
Yeah, in most cases, money. If we only talk about ransomware, yes, the main goal behind ransomware is to extract money.
And that can be anything from 5 grand to R1 million to 100 million rand. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, last year we had examples in America of companies who actually paid ransom of $56 million. It's a lot of money. It's a lucrative business. And these syndicates are now offering these services for sale or as a service.
Ah.
It's just growing. To get back to your question, so it's mostly money driven. These guys want to steal money. Also to steal intellectual property. You get that mostly from a government perspective. The Nell I'm thinking of, Armscor and those companies. Or just to cause reputational risk. So there are many factors to this whole attack scenario.
So when you start consulting to businesses, what would you say is the biggest gap in terms of their approach to having a cybersecurity strategy and operational framework or whatever you want to call it?
It depends on the level at which you consult. If it's a smaller company, I would say management buy-in, making available of funding to perform the necessary functions, security functions, and then also skills. That's also another big one. From a larger company perspective, I would, in my opinion, it's technology stacks that do not work together. It's fragmented. The whole approach is fragmented. You'd like to have a response capability from the endpoint to the perimeter, and most often it's lacking because of the fragmentation of the different technology stacks that these guys are using.
I think some of the experiences that we have in the field is a customer might think, I have a firewall and I'm doing some backup, so it must be okay.
No, it's not okay. It's a good start. It shows intent. If that's one good thing, but it's not enough. In cybersecurity, we talk about a defense in depth strategy or approach, and this means that you have to protect your organization from the perimeter down to the endpoint, and starting with the firewall, intrusion prevention systems, and so on, down to the EDR or antivirus at the endpoints. It's difficult nowadays with the work from home scenario and with all the challenges that COVID's brought in. So literally what we are doing is we are taking employees outside the defensive mechanisms that we've built at an organizational level, and we place them at home. Your company assets, the notebook that this employee is using is now exposed to all different types of threats. Your teenage son comes in and he plugs in a USB stick. You know, it's challenging and it's different. I'm just thinking of patch management. To manage patching or to execute your patching strategy on a work from home level is very, very challenging and difficult. I've so far not yet seen one large company that's managed to implement this very, very successfully. So it is a challenge. Yes.
It's like you say, the organization built these secure walls to keep the assets safe, and now you send
them. Now we take them outside those walls. Yes. You're 100% right.
So, PNN, I think you alluded to it earlier. Once you have this cybersecurity strategy, what then? Because, you know, you might have it's good on paper, but what do? You almost like you caught the bus. You're like Jack Russell that caught the bus. What do you do with it?
Implement, measure, and improve. Okay, so like you said, if you don't implement the strategy, it's kind of pointless. And your risk posture is going to stay the same. you have to continuously improve on your strategy and measure the strategy. And that's why it's important for you to develop metrics and KPIs so that you can continuously measure where you're at with the implementation and the maturity of your strategy. So it's something that has to be continuously driven.
And now taking that back to the skills level. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a SME or maybe even a medium to larger type organization,
yeah.
and I'm cognizant of the fact that skills is a problem,
yeah.
I assume then the logical route to go is then to bring in experts like yourselves.
Could be, yes. It's an option. There are many companies that offer we call it a VSISO, virtual Chief Information Security Officer. And it's a good thing to have that guidance and somebody to steer, guide, and to champion the cybersecurity effort within an organization at board level or at management level. A good CISO is going to cost you from 2 million rand a year up. So it's a very costly skill to employ. To outsource it makes sense in some instances.
And then is that where so that's the person that's going to make or the function or the role that's going to ensure that those KPIs and metrics are tracked and upheld and all that type of stuff?
Absolutely.
What tools does that function use? Is that where a SOC comes into the mix?
A SOC is one weapon in the arsenal.
Okay.
In the beginning, when we started this conversation, I spoke about technical and administrative controls. So the idea is to deploy these administrative controls. These are things like your firewalls, intrusion prevention systems, and over and above your technical controls, you also want to have a look at your critical systems. I'll talk about that just now. But these technical controls now have to be monitored to ensure that they perform as intended and as they should, and also to detect threats and attacks. If you don't do that, then it's kind of pointless having those controls in place. Also in terms of your critical assets, I've not yet come across one organization that's had a proper asset identification and classification scheme in place. And it goes back to that old adage, if you don't know what you have, how valuable it is, and where it is, how are you going to protect it? Are you going to throw money to it to protect it? I've not yet come across one organization with a proper, robust AIC scheme in place. The point is the AIC scheme will assist you in identifying business critical assets, and these assets also have to be monitored from a security perspective. So yeah.
Okay, and then, so we have those elements now, and then talk to me about where does the SOC come into the mix then?
So the security operations center. So once you've identified all your technical controls and your critical assets, the Security Operations Center is a central hub where everything pertaining to cybersecurity operations happens from. So it also serves as a central hub where all your logs and your events come together. The primary tools that are used in a SOC is called a Security Incident and Event Monitoring Tool. That's like, I like to call it the mother of all syslog servers, but it's basically ingesting all your logs and it correlates and it aggregates and it massages it and kicks off automated workflows or playbooks, etc., etc. And the second primary tool that we use is SOAR. It stands for Security Orchestration, Automation, and Response. So basically, what happens is all these events will go to your SIEM tool. It'll be parsed. It'll be understood by the machine. Depending on the level of the tool, you'll have some sort of machine learning and algorithms that's helping out there. And eventually, if a event or sequence of events are classified as an incident, it could be thrown to the SOAR. And the SOAR then, at machine speed, does the enrichment and the investigations for you, or assist with the investigations. So just leveraging off those two tools, and I've built a couple of security operations centers in my life. And when I started, it took my engineers in the region of between 45 minutes and an hour to investigate an incident. And
so something happens on a event log or something, it comes in, it's something that you haven't seen before, and now you need to try and work out what's happening.
Yes, yes. You have to triage, you have to investigate. Is the source IP address where this perceived attack is coming from? Is it really malicious or not? So somebody has to go sit and open up a browser and go to something like a Talos Intelligence and check the reputation of the IP address or domain or whatever the case may be. And it takes time and it takes manpower. And we've spoken about the costliness of manpower. Yes. So with a SOAR, this is machine-driven, and those activities happen at machine speed. And the result is that within 15 to 20 minutes, the SOC engineers now know that, yes, this is really an incident. This is a malicious IP address. And they can start formulating a remediation and containment plan. So services level agreement perspective, we provide our clients with a remediation and containment plan in the case of it being an incident within 1 hour. And I think that's unparalleled. It's very good.
So just to make sure I understand, so the strategy component, you map out what the vision and what's the goals that you want to achieve, and then, yes, and then you do the gap analysis and you implement some form of, let's call it, administrative control and metrics.
Yes.
And then the security operations center is then the let's call it the eye in the sky, if we can call it that.
Yes.
That basically then sits and watches and make sure that whenever something happens, that you're somebody's looking at it and doing something about it.
Yes, you're 100% right, Jaco. But remember now that the traditional function of a security operations center is to monitor, and from a strategy perspective, that gap analysis, monitoring could be one element. There could be many elements missing. Yeah. It's one element. So it's one way to fill that gap is to consume SOC services.
Okay. Another difficult question, and I assume everything comes down to money. Do you think there is a business that doesn't need a SOC type service?
It's difficult. I think it depends on the appetite for risk, and how business critical the systems are. I think if you talk to a company that provides plumbing services, they probably run off a spreadsheet. It's not that critical for them. But any larger company who makes use of IT resources to support and drive their businesses, it would be beneficial. It would be wise for them to monitor those assets.
Because, I mean, how often do companies know that there is actually a threat that's sitting inside their network or that's busy attacking?
If they don't monitor, they won't know until they've been compromised, until they've received a ransom letter. Ransomware is actually, I'm deviating a bit, it's actually something that's very close to my heart. We've been dealing with this with quite a few customers. So what these guys are actually doing nowadays is, before they actually start encrypting your assets, they will actually exfiltrate all your information with the idea that once you are given a ransom note and you refuse to pay, they then release that information publicly to damage your reputation as much as possible. So these are all things that can be detected. So one of our use cases that we're looking for is a sudden spike or exfiltration of data, which could be indicative of ransomware being deployed in the environment. So it's very interesting, and it comes with experience, to be able to detect these things and develop these use cases.
So I'm glad that it's close to your heart, because, I mean, I think, I've got a couple of scenarios that's coming to mind now. We'll try and guide a customer specifically in terms of security.
Yeah.
And we've got customers that says, "Oh no, I've got antivirus running on my PC, and I'm doing backups twice a day to five different hard drives," and that in their mind, I think that's the because some sort of IT resource said to them, "Listen, I can recover us from anything that's going to happen." And then often it takes us time to explain to the customer, but, you know, ransomware is a different antivirus probably is not going to help you.
Yeah.
Can you maybe give us one or two examples of
Yeah, absolutely.
Ransomware events that happen and how they
do it. So many times these ransomware actors do not come in. So the primary way of getting into your organization is by phishing. So they solicit user to click on a link, and a user captures a credentials, and that's then used to.
So somebody trusted sitting inside your organization that clicked on a link, they're putting in stuff. It's a trusted party,
and that's how these guys. They then use these credentials to infiltrate your organization and then start moving laterally, to your domain or your domain controllers. That's gold. That's what they want. Phishing is one. Poorly configured systems. We've seen a lot. EDR and AV is not going to help you there. And then also we have seen where users just plug in USB sticks. You know, there's not that hygiene. So there are many, many types of control. So let's look at EDR. Not all EDRs are created equal, and not all EDRs will detect and block ransomware. And the EDR vendors know this. That's why the move nowadays is away from signature-based detection to more anomaly and heuristic-based detection. In other words, we're learning what is the normal behavior of a process or a service, and anything that's an outlier to that then gets flagged or blocked. But if these are zero-day type ransomware attacks, nothing is going to detect it. So it doesn't really hold water. And then also in terms of the backups, many times companies keep their backups on site connected to the network. Yeah. And that's one of the first things that the ransomware will look for, is your backups, and also encrypt your backups.
And the reason they do that is because they know when there's an event, of immediate thing you're going to do, try and restore backup.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's almost logical.
Absolutely, yes.
So on that point, the EDR, is that what historically was known as antivirus?
Let's call it next generation antivirus. So in the past, your antivirus used to work with signatures. In other words, if a technical control like AV or intrusion prevention systems or any of those types of tools, if it works with a signature, that means it's able to detect known threats and vulnerabilities. In other words, there had to be a threat and vulnerability in the wild. Somebody had to submit that to the vendor, and they developed a signature for this machine to detect it. And nowadays, with all the zero-day type attacks, it's not enough. And the move now is towards the EDR, the anomaly-based and heuristic-based type detection.
Okay. So, I just want to repeat it. The perception is that if you have antivirus on your PC, that's going to protect you. That's antiquated. It's not.
No. It's not going to protect. It'll leave you in a measurably better space than someone who doesn't have those controls.
Yes.
But it's not a guarantee that you're not going to be hit by ransomware. And the same with the argument that you have backups in place. Even if you have backups and it's on site and connected to the network, be guaranteed that you're going to be hit there too. And if it's stored off-site, think of the time it's going to take you to bring those back and to rebuild. So typically what needs to happen is, once you've been hit by ransomware, you need to take all your machines offline, and in most cases you'll have to rebuild them. You'll have to bring them up in a remediation VLAN. It takes time. It takes between 20 to 40 days to recover from these types of attacks.
So it's a month to two, basically.
Yeah, that you're off business, that you're not generating revenue.
Yeah. And I mean that's the, you know, coming back to the 50,000 bricks, that's easy. If you don't transact for a month or two, it's easy to quantify what the cost is. How many bricks are those?
Yeah. You're 100% right. And I also think that if communication, if something like a CISO level person is there to translate the cyber risk to business risk, there would be more appetite from a management or board level to provide funding to implement proper cybersecurity strategy.
100%. And what I like about that role, specifically if it's independent, there's no technology bias, or that person's not coming to try and sell you a system or this brand of antivirus or this brand of firewall. They're just coming to give you an objective view of what the state of play is.
You're 100% right, and I think it's something that we pride ourselves on. I deplore a situation where a person comes with a preconceived idea of, or he comes from a previous vendor and he pushes a specific technology. What I typically do during consultation is I follow a systems engineering approach. So I would go and sit with the end user, and I'll solicit user requirements in terms of what is exactly needed, and we will then get to a product that could provide those. We will couple measures of effectiveness and measures of performance to those, and at the end of the day, the client will get exactly what he needs from a third party independent perspective. So we it's totally vendor neutral.
And to me, I think that's probably historically the biggest problem. Why specifically in that SME space there is so much, I almost want to call it ill education, is because there's people that just go and sell. They just want to do a vendor sell, basically. That's the reason. So if your PowerPoint slides are good enough, and you can convince somebody, if they install this antivirus on their PC, they're safe from the world, then that, you know, that's the game.
And I couldn't agree with you more. My experience has showed that in most instances, companies, after 3 to 4 years, they change technologies. But the reason behind that is because they're only using 20% of the technology capabilities, but they're paying for 100%.
Yeah. Okay. Pierre, last question. So if we have a business owner or management level person that sat and listened to this, and something that we spoke about sort of struck their heart, and they say, I need to patch up my whole view towards my cybersecurity strategy, where does one start?
So they could contact a vendor or supplier. They could contact sales at cyberantics.co.za or my personal email, pierre.jacobs@cyberantics.co.za.
And the view for that is then the starting point is get a view of what your environment looks like.
Yeah, 100%. Let's just start with that first pass assessment. Let's just see where you're at in terms of your cyber journey. And from there, we can start making plans. But if we don't know, if you're blind, if you don't know what you have, if it's a haphazard, disjointed effort, you're surely to be compromised at some stage.
And I almost want to, we speak about it a lot on the show. Even in our own business, you know, there's some disjointed efforts that happen, and it's because of the speed at which business happens.
Yes.
But you know, like you said, you know, I'm pretty sure I've also not walked into a business where they've got a 100% bulletproof plan.
No.
It's rehearsed. If in the case of an event, they know what's going to happen. They know that everything is getting looked at, and that they can sleep safely at night. So. I always say, you know, we must have very religious customers because they've got a lot of faith.
You're 100% right, Jaco. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yes. Okay, Pierre. So, I mean, I think for me, the end to this discussion then is basically say, listen, if you don't have something firm in place, get an independent view and have a look and see what's happening. If you have something in place, and we also have that conversation sometimes with customers where, you know, the people that do the assessment will also provide certain technology. So who polices the policeman, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think there's almost every scenario that you can think of where it's worthwhile getting a third-party independent view of what the state of play is. And in you know, like you say, worst-case scenario is actually the best-case scenario. There's nothing wrong and you can sleep happily at night.
Absolutely right, Jaco. Absolutely.
Pierre, thank you for your time. I feel like we've got to chat a lot more, but I think we're definitely gonna do a lot more of these.
And thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for sharing all of your insights.
Thanks, Jaco. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Unbundled, brought to you by Catalytic, a series that aims to demystify technology so that you can make smarter decisions for your business. Remember that you can listen to all of the episodes on the Cliff Central app or website. And for added convenience, you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google, or Spotify. And if you're looking for help with communications tools in your business, please visit catalytic.co.za. Cliffcentral.com.